You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Plus minus.
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there.
What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
plus
respected.
Plus minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Hello and welcome back to a finally edition of the Warriors Plus Minus podcast. It's been a while.
But I don't know that we did the show anymore. I thought it was over. I thought it was full-time hiatus. We're back though. We're back.
I hopped in and did somewhat of a draft preview just to fill the feed about a week or two ago. But now I got my real draft experts in here.
Oh God.
Tim Kawakami, Ethan Strauss. Ethan, can you name
That's
a prospect
the draft
in this
expert,
draft?
By the way.
To quote the great Charles Barkley, God's the only expert, Kenny. God's the only expert.
Okay, I know me and Tim did it, the TK show and talk prospects. I know Marcus has been into some of the draft stuff. Where are you guys at on this draft? How studied are you? But we're about a week out or what, 8 days, 9 days out of this thing.
It's funny. I've got a lot of knowledge of top five guys, but I feel like I'm so weak on maybe some of the first guys the Warriors might pick, beyond Scottie Barnes, because he was on the radar and Kuminga was on the radar. But a lot of the dudes in the Warriors tranche, if we're going to call it that, I feel like tranche, just like the mortgage-backed securities to 2008. Remember everybody was talking about tranches? Hopefully it will go better for the Warriors than it did for financial institutions back then. But I feel
Which
like
means they'll get bailed out, so it's all good.
Oh, yeah. That would be great. I feel like I'm not at the level I want to be. So I'm just like the listeners right now. You know, I'm not going to pretend. I'm just going to absorb your knowledge and then come up with takes based on your takes and act like I'm smart.
How much of that, Ethan, is KHSD, post Killian Hayes?
Killian Hayes disorder. It is.
Oh, I'm traumatized. I am traumatized by it. You know,
throw
the
Mello into that too.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I had the good thing about me in that draft analysis back then is we had so much time that I think that I had a take for and against my take just to fill all the time as we were trying to get blood from a stone. So I think that's part of it. I think my takeaway is you have to know what you're good at. You have to know what you're not so good at. And as much as I like the draft and I like reading about it, I was going based on stats. I was using that as my kind of quick and dirty way. And what I'm realizing is, and we might have some theories about why it is, it just seems like it's old school. You need the scout sensibility. You need to be Nate Duncan and have those really granular observations and understanding of how a guy goes from one level to the next. And I think that the stats failed me. And I ultimately had that takeaway. And I just also had that takeaway of, man, if I had to be a scout and make my money that way, I would be out on the street. It would not go so well for me.
One thing I do miss, though, is I like layering over people's opinions year after year because I know you can kind of sense what people like. If somebody I read likes something one year and he likes something else, I can kind of feel like where that's leading me on value, and I can evaluate that with a baseline. Like if you had told me something about somebody this year and I go, okay, he liked, you know, Wiseman this much and Ball this much and, you know, Avdija and all that. I wish he had done more, Ethan, I'll put it that way. I have no control over anything you write anymore. I used to, but I don't. But I like that because you put so much analysis into it. I understand what you're saying now. But I kind of like, I understand who some people like. I kind of get who Chad Ford likes, what kind of player. I kind of get who Sam Vecenie likes, you know, and Hollinger. And the thing is, like, I almost agree with Hollinger 100% of the time. It's like, is that scary? Is that bad?
That's interesting. Like, it is a reflection of what you're into, like, what kind of players you're into, what your theory of how the league is going, and do you think big men are coming back, or do you think that they're on the way out? You know, all those are reflected in it.
What kind of big man? What kind of wing? And he's the one who convinced me early on that Scotty Barnes was going to go ahead of Kuminga. And I read what he said. I looked at it. I go, that's absolutely. I completely agree. In fact, I wrote it and had someone disagree with me and wanted me to change it. And I disagreed vehemently with that, and we kept it. And I don't think there's a doubt. Well, I mean, there's doubts. Who knows? It just takes one team. But I think Scotty Barnes is now generally listed higher than Jonathan Kuminga. In fact, it's 50-50 that Kuminga is going to be there for the Warriors at 7.
The real question is Jonathan Kuminga going to go after Scotty Barnes because you guys are right? Or because you said it and now you've shaped the whole process like a butterfly?
I've shaped the process.
Well, Hollinger, right?
Yeah. The Orlando Magic wanted Jonathan Kuminga, but they saw Tim Kawakami said, I don't know.
I don't think so.
Scotty Barnes, here he comes.
That's like the Skip Bayless transition of, I thought I was going to take Jonathan Kuminga. And then I saw...
Didn't Colin Cowherd shape who the 49ers were going to take, right? That's what happened.
Facts.
Yep.
That's exactly what happened.
The swing pick is 6 in this draft. It's the Thunder, who I think we all know. I definitely know that they're secretive with this stuff. And if we assume Barnes is 5 and Kuminga's sitting there at 6... Sam Presti was in the G League bubble the entire time. He has all the intel you could want on Kuminga. The intel, apparently, you know, from an outsider perspective, doesn't sound like it was great. There's a chance I think he goes book night. There's a chance I think he goes something random.
He could go big. He could go big guy there.
Yeah, he could. Sengun, you know, we're talking about the Turkish League MVP. I could see Sam pulling the trigger on something like that.
Good mixtape.
So let's say Kuminga is there at 7. And let's say, you know, that would obviously boost the Warriors' trade value. But let's say the trade doesn't materialize that they like. Would you guys pick Jonathan Kuminga 7th?
MT?
I'd trade down.
Wow. I just said
the trade that you like didn't materialize.
Why do I have to like the trade now?
So you're just saying, here, give me 9. You can have 7. You don't need to give me anything else. A 2028 second round.
I have a question. I should know this, but
to be determined later.
If you don't make your pick in time, do you just lose it? What happens?
You pass, and then you can get back in line. So then if you pass at 7, and then 8 can pick, and then 9 can pick, 10 can pick, you got to jump into line if you pass.
Marcus, you just let the clock run out and then decide, when do I want to do this?
That's like something that would happen in the Kevin Costner movie Draft Day. That's his supposedly genius measure. I'm going to pass.
Thompson, give me the card, Thompson.
And I wait till the last second, and then I'm like, oh, my watch is slow.
Oops. It'd be a tough decision for the Warriors because would be clearly the most talented player, I think. You know, he's top 5 talent, probably, and you're sitting there at 7, and you just want to infuse talent, and the guy is, you know, projects to be something close to an all-star, but not this season, maybe not even next season. That's out of their timeline, could piss off their veterans. But then, again, you look at Wiseman and Kuminga, that's not a terrible way to start a new era. Like, that is not a terrible way. And you throw Jordan Poole in there, and maybe you hope you get your solid guy at 14.
Yeah, that's what you do. You take him at 7, and you hope 14 ends up
Chris
happening.
Duarte.
And you can all, yeah, yes, absolutely, right? And what it would do is it would put more pressure on the vet that you can sign, right? Or what you do if you do anything with Oubre. Like, you kind of have to nail those if you have Kuminga, because that's just one spot where you're like, all right, this is basically a draft and stash on our roster. So that's the big issue. But I do think even if he's not giving you the trade you want on draft day, he's still a piece that you could use later, or you just got to nail the other three roster spots you add. You just got to nail them and not bank on a guy who might not be ready.
Do you guys feel this way where I have no idea which guy is actually going to be better than the other, but Scotty?
Absolutely not. I know exactly who.
Okay. Well, let me.
And the Orlando Magic is waiting for you to tell them.
But Scotty Barnes, if they pick him, I'm excited. I'm intrigued. There's something a little different about him. He could be this prototypical guy. I don't know if he becomes that, but I'm very excited in a way if they draft Kuminga. He's an athletic kind of big wing. I mean, do you guys feel that way as well?
this is how I feel. Scotty Barnes defends at an NBA level tomorrow. Scotty Barnes could be plugged into a rotation, and man, there would be some awkward moments with him and Draymond Green hot potato in the ball at times, and there are offensive concerns with Scotty Barnes, but he could be part of like just this switchy defense that could just terrorize, I think, as a 19, 20-year-old. Jonathan Kuminga needs shots, needs touches. They're going to be super inefficient in his first couple of years. He's the type of player that every minute he's in the rotation next season, you know, Steph Curry's eye rolling like, oh my God, like, you know, he's trying to get back to his 19 footer. Like, we really got to do this again. So he would basically have to be in Santa Cruz. And then, like Marcus was talking about, you would have to construct the roster around the idea that roster spot 14, 15 are two projects with Wiseman, Kuminga. And what their big problem last year is, you know, they obviously had Wiseman, but they also had the Smiley Geach spot, you know, Mulder,
Klay Thompson spot.
Yeah, Klay Thompson spot, Mulder, yeah. You know, some of that. And that's, they need to go in this year, and suddenly Mulder becomes Batum. Bazemore can maybe stay Bazemore. Damian Lee becomes, you know, whoever.
Don't forget about Allen. Allen becomes Kuminga.
You want to know what the truth is? Yes, Allen becomes Kuminga. Yeah, and you feel a lot better about that, right? You
feel a little bit better. When did he become Allen, by the way? He's smiling. He's smiling. Yeah, keep they pick up Iverson somewhere in there.
Is it Smiley Geach or Smiley Geach?
Is he going to have a career turnaround if we start calling him Al?
Al Smiley.
Big Al.
There's a rapper named like Al that. Smiley somewhere.
That's not terrible. I said, if the Myers front office is doing it, and I'm sure this is what they do, they've got a pretty good idea who they can get with that luxury tax mid-level. A tax, you know, what, at $5 million, $5.9 million. If they have a pretty good idea, they can get a solid wing with that number. They have a way to plug in a sure rotation player, then I think that makes Kuminga a lot easier to take at 7. And I think you probably do take him at 7. If they do not have a line on that, if they're looking at, you know, stray pieces there who may or may not help, and if it's Brad Wanamaker 2.0 or whoever the hell else, then I think that they got to look at maybe passing on Kuminga. And I don't think they want to. Yeah, I don't think they want to. But you can't come out of this without two people you can play on the wing, I think. And they have three pieces. They have the 7, they have the 14, and they have the mid-level.
Chris Duarte can play on the wing.
He's ready to play yesterday, baby.
Yeah, Kuminga Duarte would not be a terrible way to come out of this. It really, I mean, you could think of other ways that can make him better immediately, but if you go Kuminga and know you're going to end up with Duarte at 14, that is not a terrible way to come out of this.
But look, here's the question I have. Kuminga at 7 is probably like almost unanimously the best talent available, right? Best ceiling. But what if they love Moody? Do they take, and we know where they stand on Moody, right? Like, do they take the guy that they love, they like? Yeah. Do they take the guy they really like and who think they can play now? Or do you go with the best value, highest upside? Like, that to me might end up being a tough decision. Because they might take the guy they like and he won't have Kuminga ceiling.
The one thing I will say that I think is good for them is that they're having at least now 2 weeks to decide on this, because this isn't a draft night. Oh my God, Kuminga's might fall to us. Like, you kind of know now it might happen. So, you know, they're not going to get Kuminga in the facility, because if you're Jonathan Kuminga, you're not going to want to be seen working out for the 7th pick, because at this point you still think you're top 5. But they can do all the due diligence they want. They played against him in the bubble. I know, you know, actually I know Myers went down to the bubble. Like, I don't know right now what exactly they think on Kuminga. And the last time I talked to somebody, there's still skepticism that Kuminga would even be there for them. But they need to prepare for that idea. And included in that, they need to survey the league and go, hey, if Kuminga's there, what do you think about our trade package now?
Kuminga, Wiseman, 14. Yeah, that's a decent pick.
That's what's probably happening now. I mean, that's like, I'm sure teams in the back that are interested in Kuminga are looking at, okay, where do we need to get to? And it's 5, 6, 7. And it definitely includes 7. I mean, does Moses Moody play this season? Like, is he in the rotation?
I think there's a chance. He has a very, like, patient, mature game. You know, I've said kind of like a little bit more sped up Kyle Anderson.
I think that shot is going to translate. I think he'll be.
Yeah, it looks good. Shots. You know, he only.
Here's a little suspicion I have. Is they put him in front of a microphone. They put other guys in front of my big workout. This is who we're looking at. And another day, everybody, why don't we'll get you. We'll put him in front of the microphone. and let's sneak James Book Knight in for a little secret workout. See, that makes me, you know, and Slater and I talked about this last week. I just want y'all to know
I'm big on Book Knight. After TK, yeah. TK, you got me on Book Knight.
So I want to talk about Book Knight in a second. I don't have a full explanation on this Book Knight situation. It was clearly like this was kind of secretive workout, but it could have been from the Book Knight side. It could have been from the, like, it's weird.
That's normally what happens. The agent wants to get him in the discussion. He wants to get him like being talked about at 7, which makes it, even if the Warriors pass on him at 7, makes 8, 9, you know, much more likely. Makes maybe 6 more likely. So
I think 6 is possible with the Thunder and Book Knight. And I do think there's maybe some type of tug of war down there in that range. And he's clearly in the mix. I mean, the thing with Book, I mean, you mentioned, like, could Moody play or not next season? I think Moody's got a way better argument to play next season than Book Knight does. Because, you know, you talk about what Kuminga needs with, like, you know, pick and roll touches and shots and whatever. Do you know what James Book Knight's assist to turnover was last year?
Yeah, it wasn't good. Yeah.
He's 92 turnovers and like 63 assists.
Yeah, he's not that guy. He doesn't even project it really to be a starter. He projects a guy who,
what
gets
did Ethan
buckets,
tell you about the stats, buckets, man? Be careful about the stats.
Those stats burn you. They'll burn you.
If I had to guess of anyone projected in the 7 to 14 range who 5 years from now will be the best scorer, I think it's James Book Knight. So maybe that's your argument. But I think the same argument that we're having with Kuminga, like you're drafting him as a project, that's what you'd have to do with Book Knight. Because Steph Curry and Draymond Green do not want him out there like getting to his 19-footer, you know, 5 times a game next season. He could do that in Santa Cruz, and maybe they're fine if he's doing that in Santa Cruz and Rudy Gay is playing rotation minutes. But James Book Knight is not a next season pick.
I'm just saying, I'm always gassed by these highlight videos. I'm just saying his spot up three looks really good. That's all I'm saying. I saw the highlights. I saw the
I got a question combine for you. Have you, because I've watched some scouting stuff where they go through his lowlights, we'll say. Have you seen some of the
Why would you watch lowlights during
that's depressing.
Everyone looks watching like lowlights? A number one pick. I'm like, Franz Wagner might win Defensive Player of the Year next year. Like, why are they not picking him?
Hey, so Ethan, I got a question for you, though. I know you probably have an idea of some of the players who Steve Kerr likes. What kind of voice does he have in the room?
He's not in the room. He's not even going to be in the room.
He's not in the room, but will his voice be there?
I think he has a far bigger voice than he wants to be known to have. Because whenever we talk to him, and he said this in the interview. Did he say this in the interview with Slater recently? But yeah, he did in the interview with Slater where he was saying, I've got the Olympic commitments and so I'm not as involved, but he likes to get in the mix. He likes to be involved.
That's just cover, right? He's just saying that like, yeah.
He was in Chicago. He was in Chicago.
Former GM, all those things.
Yeah, watching but he those also, prospects.
It's also not his decision. I mean, I think that's one cover he does have. It really is not his decision. It's Bob Myers' decision.
Particularly this year.
It's not his decision, but would they have traded Klay Thompson for Kevin Love if not for Steve Kerr? You know,
there was a legendary
white-haired guy
might have had a say in that also.
I agree there was, but to get, you know, there's an inner sanctum, right? There is a citadel of decision makers, and I think that Steve Kerr is in that citadel.
Well, I mean, he's got to work with the players. I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense.
I mean, Slater, you know this, right? It might come down to a player Steve absolutely loves and the front office absolutely love, like, and which one do they take? And one you could probably get at 14. That's the really tricky part.
I don't want to get too digressing much, but that Moses Moody shot looks good.
Ethan's
looking up. Oh, now we got Ethan looking high.
This is the first time Ethan has seen Moses.
No. All kidding aside, I've watched a lot of Moody, but I'm just watching again, and it's so funny because it's a highlight video and it says strengths on it as a label. It's like, no, we're not doing that Slater stuff. We're watching all strengths. Right
Slater
now
is googling
and
weakness.
And this
turnovers.
It's
pretty good to know, boys. Pretty good to know.
My non-stats take, because we're trying to go against the stats after the failure of stats last draft. It's just, it's hard to see that shot and go, oh, he's going to come up to the NBA and he's going to just start missing and not be able to. Like, that is a perfect no wasted motion shot right there from Moody, and that is something that they have needed, so that's very intriguing. I'll say that much.
In game 3 at Chase Center, Moody's going to completely float out of the game. He's going to get his shot blocked 3 times at the rim, and you three are going to go, what the hell is this? I never saw this
what
in college.
Hell?
Why is
what
he suddenly
hell?
Just missing at the rim all the time? And, like, you know, he has no creative finishes. What's going on?
We're going to say, why is he shooting at the rim? Do you see that shot and how pretty it is?
Here's what I'm saying. Nobody that the Warriors put in front of the Zoom camera as a draft prospect is who they're taking. I'm going to say that right now. I don't think they're going to do that. Then they put him in front of the camera. I just don't think
maybe they
should double trick me by doing it exactly because they didn't plan to do it.
If you didn't make it into the Zoom camera, that means you're eliminated.
I don't trust that. I don't trust that. Here's exactly who we're
talking to. Chris Duarte the other day, and I'm not sure he's not in the mix at 14.
There you go. I'm suspicious of when they say, here's all our draft prospects. Why don't you take a look at all of them? And that's exactly who we're. No, that's not. How this is going
to
work.
I'm sending the clip to Marcus right now because it's like a good screensaver, these Moody jumpers. It's just a good move.
I'm telling you, man, that thing will translate, dude.
You just want Eric Musselman back part of the Warriors franchise. That's what you
Coach
want.
Muss, let's go. I'm with Coach Muss.
What's his strengths? Tell me about his strengths. I only want to hear about his strengths, Muss. Come on.
Ethan's not even watching his threes. Ethan's watching his free throws. He's like 81% of the line. There's the indicator.
It is. No. I used to be somebody who would tell you that the college free throw shooting translates to the pro shooting ability, but I'm off those stats, so I won't say that. I don't make judgments on the basis of that anymore.
Then let me ask you, Davion Mitchell shot 45% from three last season. Moses Moody's in like 36 or something like that. Davion Mitchell free throw percentage is not that good, but Davion Mitchell was striping threes all last season. Every kind of three you want. Off the dribble, he's in the 40%. Catch and shoot, 40% relocation type stuff. If you believe in the Davion Mitchell shot, and I'm not saying you do, but if you do, should he not be the pick?
Listen, Davion Mitchell is going to be the toughest call, I think, in this draft. I mean, there is zero question this dude can play. Like, he can play. Like, you watch him. He can play. I watched that whole championship game again against Jalen Suggs. He's the best player on the floor.
You want to know what other game? Go two games earlier, Elite Eight. Watch him play against Moses Moody in Arkansas and tell him he's the best player on the floor.
That dude can play. So now you get into the draft like thing, value or the player you love. Man, I bet there are teams hoping the Warriors take Davion at 7 and make somebody fall.
This is a no stats podcast. So with Mitchell, it seemed to me that a lot of it was that off the dribble three. It kind of was a little Kemba-esque with how he took that. And is that the sort of shot you want him taking? Is that the shot that they're going to have him take? Because with Moody, it seems much more traditional off guard.
Yeah, like role player, like Mikal Bridges, basically.
I think it's a size problem with Mitchell, too. That's like, you know, 6 feet tall without shoes. That's tough. I mean, again, yeah, he can 6'1". Guard.
Give him credit. 6'1 and 0.25.
Without shoes? I thought it was 6'0". Okay.
Kerr's not going to want that. I'll say that much.
Not a lot of wingspan. You know, it's just going to be tough to say, okay, yeah, he can guard Lillard. He can guard a few others, but he's not going to be guarding the bigger twos and certainly not threes. That's what makes it tricky for me. I think if it's Kuminga or Mitchell, I don't think it's a question. I take Kuminga. Kuminga's not there. If it's Mitchell or Booknight, you know, then you get into a question of what you really like. Or Moody, you know, and that it becomes maybe you just take the bigger player. Maybe you just go with the more versatile, you know, switchable player.
According to sources, I might have spoken too soon on saying Kerr wouldn't love that. I was stereotyping. So I strike that. Wouldn't love Mitchell. So I will strike that for the record. Yeah, yeah.
You just get a text from Tokyo. He's listening to the feed here.
To me, I think Davion Mitchell will not be the best player 5 years from now from 7 to 14. But I do think Davion Mitchell is the best player for next season's team. I think he's the guy that I would feel most comfortable about saying there's a playoff game and he has a role in the playoff game. His role is going to be if they're playing Portland in a playoff series, like Damian Lillard is going to get a stint of Davion Mitchell picking him up full court and like kind of pissing him off, you know, like in his, you know, when like Damian Lillard passes away, cause he's like, man, I'm not trying to dribble up and like have to be turned five times to get into our offense right now, because Davion Mitchell just has endless energy. He's a workhorse. He has that Draymond Green type mentality and he's going to be out there. Tim Kawakami will love having to watch this on a regular basis. He's probably going to take a charge or two that like really piss the scorer off. And if it's Patrick Beverley with a bit more of an offensive game, like that helps them a lot more next season than I think some of these raw wings. But at the same time, they shouldn't only be worried about 2021, 2022. If Moses Moody's going to be the far superior player or whoever for book night, let's say 3 years from now, should they just draft because Draymond Green wants a point of attack, you know, pit bull next season?
Here's a question. I mean, of those three, who do you think is, we know Kuminga would go eight if he doesn't go seven, but of the three, Moody, Mitchell, Booknight, who's most likely to be there at 14? I think it's Mitchell. I think Mitchell might go to 14.
You know, I actually talked to Vicini about this, and he thinks it's actually Moody, which surprised me. He the weird thing is, 7 through 14, there are some, like, Mitchell, I guess, skeptics. I have heard the thought that the Hornets, I think, are at 11, I think, are interested in potentially pairing Mitchell with LaMelo moving forward as kind of like the defensive tandem next to LaMelo, kind of take some of that load
That's
off.
That's super interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
It just seems though that would run against, I'm not saying that's inaccurate, it's probably accurate. I don't know what these teams are going to take, but it seems like the wings who shoot just keep punching above their weight, that these guys who are either undrafted or drafted late who are shooters and we discount them, they keep turning out to be good draft picks. So it's interesting to me that a Moody would slip. I know he's not the size of a Cameron Johnson, but that was a guy, everybody was killing the Suns for that pick because he was just a shooter. And now that seems like a pretty good pick. So, and
he's been
there
great
probably a
in
bunch.
Playoffs.
Yeah, he's athletic. He's long, athletic. That's a classic NBA.
And he hits every player, time he has a big three. He's hitting it, which, you know, you never know with guys like that too, right? Remember, like, Michael Mulder last season. It was like, you know, they're up, you know, 10, and they'll like late in the fourth. It's like, oh, he just bang, bang, three, and then it's like, oh, big three, yeah, miss.
Yes, no question.
And you don't know.
It just seems like shooting is still underrated for whatever reason, or has been, and it also seems like it's not going to be that way for long. So that's one of the reasons why I'd be surprised if a Moody or just shooters in general slip. I think the guys who slip are probably going to be the guys who maybe don't have as good a shot.
Let me ask you, though, about Mitchell, because I do think he's viewed as like he's some non-shooter. And like he really did shoot 45% from three last season. Like, how do we view that? Because
Anthony, I keep telling you, not with a stat. You got to give me the anti-Billy Bean, old crusty scout in Moneyball. You got to tell me about, talk about his girlfriend, talk about his friends, his confidence.
I talked to the Bears assistant coaches, and they say this guy's an absolute workhorse.
He's first on the court. He's last off of it. He's a practice warrior. That's the guy. Leader.
I want a little Kevin Costner. Did his teammate show up to his birthday? I want to know that. This is information. It's very valuable. So if you tell me that.
I have a feeling Davion Mitchell's teammates enjoy Davion Mitchell.
Yeah. I think he's too short to take at seven. I'm saying it right now. I think he's too short to take at seven. By the way, one thing I'm concluding from just the discussion, since we're just throwing all these names together and we're not sure on any of them, if the Warriors wanted to trade seven, I don't know that there's a lot of value in it. Just because, like, who do you take at 7? You could take at 8, you could take at 9, you could take at 10, you could take at 11. I mean, do you guys think that there is, like,
it depends on who falls.
Yeah, unless it's Kuminga. Unless it's Kuminga. But, like, is someone going to go, man, I got to give you a veteran and a pick to try to move up to draft Moses Moody? I don't see that. I don't see that happening. There isn't that kind of liftoff player.
It definitely feels like a fantasy football draft where there are just a bunch of guys at nearly equal value right there, and nobody's trying to move up, and you're kind of happy where you are. You fall in love with who you fall in love with. I think what we're taking from it is, and though we can never predict what will happen, it feels like a deep draft. It feels like a draft that might not necessarily be headlined by a generational a group of generational can't miss superstars. And I will say that Cunningham, Slater's talked me out of just booking him as a superstar. He's talked me out of it with his Cunningham takes. And maybe you can get into that.
I'm actually a little bit more down on the top of the draft than I think most people are. I don't see like just absolute guaranteed franchise changers up there. Now, I think two of the top four probably will. I think Jalen Suggs has somewhat of like a lower ceiling. Like maybe he makes a few All-Star games. I think he's going to be a great player in the NBA, but I don't see superstar there. Mobley, we'll see. Toolsy and intriguing, definitely sees the game, but I don't see Joel Embiid or like, you know, Nikola Jokic necessarily.
This is huge, by the way, like Slater, like tanking the draft stock of a fellow Cowboy. Like
well, he disappointed him.
He's hoping he goes back in. Goes back to Oklahoma State for another year. Yeah, pull your name out of the draft. One more year with the Cowboys.
He kind of floated in and out of focus a little bit. And, you know, his two-point percentage is very bad. He, like, never really got to the rim. It was always, like, and, like, the shot is smooth. He's going to hit threes. Like, don't get me wrong. It's a guarantee he's going to be a good NBA player. I'm not sure I see, like, just, like, explosive
would you take
superstar.
Mobley? Would you take Mobley ahead of him?
Would I? Not really, because I'm not, like, that huge on Mobley, necessarily. What do you think about Green? It sounds like Green is most likely to go, too.
That is an interesting... That's the high variance. And also interesting because there is a Steph connection. There is a Brandon Payne connection. They have worked together. He has so much talent. And you watch some of his old games, and he, like, floats. He's just so, so skilled. And yet you just hear things. You hear, you know, maturity this, and you don't necessarily... I talked to Brian Shaw about him for a while, and it wasn't like he was trying to sell me on him becoming the next generational great. And,
did you talk to Brian Shaw pre or post bubble?
Kind of right at the beginning.
Okay. It seems to me like by the end of the bubble, Brian Shaw and their G League team was really impressed with what Green had done and how he'd matured and improved over that time, and it was almost the opposite with Kuminga. That's interesting. Just what it seemed like to me.
I think Jalen Green is equivalent to Anthony Edwards. That's what I think. And it's like that explosion offense. Like, you maybe probably can't run your offense to get him stuff. He's one of those guys who just go take it. And then you hope he picks up everything else along the way. But just a natural NBA talent that you're going to have to harness in some way. And that's why he's going to go two or three, probably two. And, you know, I completely see that. If I had to bet on who's going to be the best player in 5 years, I'd bet on him. Like, I think I said it with Anthony Edwards. Like, he's the guy who's going to get a max contract in his career out of last year's draft. Now, you might say LaMelo in there now over him, but just that raw skill. Like, you're going to not – it's unavoidable. That raw skill is unavoidable. And I think Jalen Green's got the most of it in this year's draft. But once you get past four, right, that's where everybody's – basically the same, you know, it's just depending on what you like. I think the Warriors do have an advantage in this, though. It's like, unlike a lot of the teams that they're picking, like certainly Orlando or OKC right in front of them, is they're picking for specific stuff, right? They're not picking to find the next Steph Curry because they got Steph Curry.
That is the question, though. Do they pick for this next season's team or the next two seasons team? Because if they're picking for that, like, I think Davion Mitchell should be the pick. If they're not picking for that, then I think Book Knight enters the conversation because of the ceiling.
All these things are sliding.
Yeah, is it the best to get both, right? Like,
if Mitchell is somebody you can see, you know, giving you something this season and being pretty good in 3 years, yes. But if you see him being a fourth guard in 3 years, like, that's his top out, that's not great. It just depends on exactly
you see
how
you're being a fourth guard even next season, I wouldn't pick him.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm saying the same thing with possibly trading Wiseman. Are they absolutely completely saying we will never trade him? No. They're saying if we trade him, we are going to get value for this guy. We're not trading him on the low, which makes it very difficult for them to trade him because they're not going to get a high value for Wiseman.
Well, they're higher on him than the league seems.
Exactly. So how can you trade? But again, if somebody wants him, there's a possibility that they trade him. That's, I think, the same thing for what they're looking at 7-14. If they can get a high-end raw talent, they're going to have to see some idea of what he can do this season versus what they see in 3 years. And it's not going to be all or nothing. It's going to be a blend of that. And I think Mitchell might be a little bit too much of a compromise, in my opinion, just in my opinion, because I don't see him guarding threes and I don't see him getting his own offense. And I think, again, I don't think Book Knight for sure is that. I think he's a little bit more of that, though, than Mitchell is.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I've been trying to eat in more often lately, so I signed up for Home Chef. I've had a few packages come in, and being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over all the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, even for someone like me who isn't making it onto Top Chef anytime soon. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs. so you don't have to worry about what you're making ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners 18 free meals, plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/plus. That's homechef.com/plus for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. homechef.com/plus. Must be an active subscriber to receive the free dessert.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I want to get you all on the record quick. Who would you take at seven? If, let's say, the top, Kuminga's not there, the top six go chalk, who are you taking?
I'm going Book Knight.
All chalk. Can I get Barnes?
No. Barnes is at five.
Yo, what are you talking about?
Can I take Cade Cunningham at seven?
Can I get Jalen? Like, can I get Jalen at seven?
So you were saying.
Scotty Barnes, in most estimations, has hopped even Kuminga, and he's considered probably five-ish now, and Kuminga six.
Yeah, I was like, I want some Barnes. I want Jalen Green. I want anybody that I
cannot trade for Bradley Beal.
I might go Moody.
He just watched some Moody 3-point highlights. He's hype right now.
I just want shooting.
Get Emus on the phone.
What if I go Josh Giddey because I'm chasing the LaMelo Dragon?
There you go. They went and watched him in Vegas and he was pretty good. Australia beat Nigeria.
I can see Oklahoma City taking Josh Giddey. I feel like
if Oklahoma City goes international, they'll go Sengun though. That's just my opinion. So Ethan mentioned the idea of wanting shooting. I had a player I wanted to talk to you guys about. Corey Kispert, who they brought in. To me, they kind of brought him in more in like the guys they might draft at 14 range. He was in the workout with Duarte, Zaire Williams. I watched Kispert. I mean, talk about the differences between the strengths and the weaknesses side of the film tape. You know, obviously, he'd get bulldozed in the playoffs defensively. But, I mean, he can shoot it. So like if you... like put his shooting on compared to Moses Moody's and your eyes are going to drift towards Kispert. I mean, it's deep range, it's quick trigger, it's on the move, it's confidence. I can see Steve Kerr being like, let's say, you know, you're in the rotation for 20 minutes. I want in those 20 minutes you to take 8 threes, like get him up like relentlessly. And I think he's going to be a 40 something percent 3-point shooter in the league, maybe like 41 at a pretty high volume. He can move a bit off the ball. He is more athletic than you think, but his defense is not good. What do you think about him maybe at 14, just as a sniper who's flawed, but he could kind of inject some shooting life?
This is what we were talking about before. And I think we talked about it on old podcasts, is the way the league has shifted, that kind of player was almost unthinkable to take that early in the recent past, but they just keep punching above their weight. And Duncan Robinson, guys like that, I think have helped Kispert move up the board, demonstrating that if you can shoot it well enough, that strength can overwhelm your weaknesses. So if that's the guy at 14, look, I'm not saying that's the guy they should take, but I'm not scoffing at it. I'm not saying what a terrible pick.
Oh, I think Kispert would be solid at 14. Well, he's a true senior, right? He's a 4-year college player. I know a TV announcer who would really like that.
I know a tennis guy, Brad Gilbert, on Twitter is like, every time I tweet something about the draft, he's like quote tweeting it with like, Kispert is the guy at 7. They should turn in the card now.
Yeah, I like Brad a lot, but just because you see a lot of guys, I see the guy on TV a lot, doesn't mean he's better than someone you didn't see on TV. And Kispert was on TV
22
a lot.
Years old, by the way. I mean, he's about Davion Mitchell's age, so.
He can shoot twos too, right? I saw a lot of Gonzaga. So like,
oh, yeah.
He can put the ball on the ground. You watch his offensive highlights.
Yeah. He's been Kerr's offense, I'll just say that.
He can go find buckets. He'd be a very interesting second-team scorer. You put him alongside Wiggins and Jordan Poole and Wiseman. There is a ceiling on him. There's no question. But he's not small. They're like 6'6", right? Like a true 6'6". Wingspan, I don't think he'd get destroyed on defense. I don't think he'd be great, but I don't think he's worse than, you know, Jordan Poole or somebody like that. 14, Duarte,
Joe Harris.
Yeah, I don't think he's quite as good as Joe Harris. Not quite that good, but in that ballpark, in that range. And I think those guys are valuable. Duarte or Kispert, F-14. That's where I think, again, that might not be a great pick if you're, you know, Detroit Pistons or, you know, Orlando Magic or whoever. But for the Warriors, if you have your choice, and I think they probably will have a choice between, you know, or at least one of them there, Duarte or Kispert at 14, that's pretty good value at 14. If you're not looking for a starter, if you're not looking for a guy who's got to help lead you into the new era, just can be a really strong component of a good team. One of those guys I'm real solid with, and you don't care that he's in 5 years, he's totally topped out, and there's no way he's going to be any better. You got that guy. You got James Wiseman. You might have Kuminga. You have two of those guys. You don't need a third. Warriors sitting at 14 with a choice of probably several of them. Kispert is not a bad way to end up at 14. No way I'd take him at 7, but 14 would be fine with Corey Kispert.
Give me Duarte at 14. I don't trust Gonzaga players in the NBA. I just don't.
Don't you love Jalen Hachimura? Suggs? Hachimura? Come on.
Yeah,
now.
He all right. He's all right. That's one out of how
didn't
many?
Didn't you just say you love Jalen Suggs?
Come on, Ronnie Turiaf. Yeah,
exactly, Ronnie Turiaf, Dan Dickow, Adam Morrison. Like I used to cover them dudes. Blake Stepp.
I feel the same way about some of those schools in the Big East. I always felt like those guys got overrated by East Coast media, and they didn't do so great. And you'd have your Johnny Flynn's. I like those theories on these guys from this school don't work out.
He's calling out book night.
No book night.
Hey, the Big East ain't been rated like that in a long time.
I don't even know who's in the Big East
exactly.
anymore.
It's not Chris Mullin's Big East.
Chris Mullin, Bill Wennington, Walter Berry.
Kemba started out slow, but he eventually made a career of it. So it's not a, you know, it's not a death sentence. But I do like those theories. I like those theories of these guys from this school don't work out. These guys from that school don't work out. I remember John Hollinger was saying that the offense just made guys look so good at Michigan that might have been a problem for Jordan Poole or why Jordan Poole might not have worked out.
Nick Stauskas kind of rose above all that.
Oh, yeah, that cuts against the shooter theory that was being discussed
facts,
earlier.
Right, yeah.
But I like those
24-year-old Chris Duarte who'll be ready to play. Didn't the guy play, like, junior college ball? Like, he's got some kind of
oh, yeah, he's got quite a story.
You know what I'm saying? Like, give me a guy who's been through some stuff. He's going to defend. Basically, it's a light version of Kispert. But he's going to defend.
He's the Quintel Woods of this draft.
You know what I'm saying? Like, give me the story.
Were you on his draft interview, or did you see the video?
I saw the video. I tweeted out.
He's funny. He was funny to talk to. He said he has some pulpo at dinner.
I think Warriors fans would really like him, and that's he would fit.
Who do you trust better, TK? Oregon guys or Gonzaga guys?
Who's the great Oregon guys?
Like, Dylan Brooks. You love Dylan Brooks.
Yeah, I do love Dylan Brooks. I do love Dylan Brooks. That's one. Give me
Jordan Bell. Jordan Bell.
Yeah. Chris Boucher.
Yes.
Hey, he's turning out
yeah,
to be
you
boy.
Like Chris Boucher. You like Chris
he's
Boucher.
He's all right.
Come on. Let me see who these Oregon.
I think Duarte would be fine, and he'd fit in, with JTA.
Peyton Pritchard, let's go.
Yeah, I was about to, that's Peyton what Pritchard. I was trying to pull that out of my brain. I was going, oh, my God.
You know what they have? They have guys who play, like, better. Like, they come in on a low scale, and they play above what you expect from them. There's a bit of grit.
They play with pace. I like that's what Oregon guys play with pace. I like that coach. I like the way they play. We shall see. You know what? The real school is Boise State because we're overlooking a superstar.
Justinian
Jessup. Come on. We're just giving a roster spot over him. Come on. That's like having a 14 pick right now. Justinian Jessup.
I mean, never mind on Moody. They already got their shooter. It's gonna be a really, really intriguing summer league. That's gonna be one of the most intriguing summer leagues. I mean, I don't want to say in Warriors history because they've had a few, but in some time, I mean,
if Wiseman was playing, it would maybe be in history. He's not, so that makes it a little less. But let me ask the two book night proponents, and even Ethan can jump in here. Do you at all care about the idea that he is a little bit duplicitous or whatever you say of Jordan Poole
Jordan
and
Poole,
the fact
yeah,
that Jordan
yeah.
Poole like he would, like he would slide into a role that Jordan Poole kind of emerged into.
The word is implicit as well.
I was thinking he's
kind of pulling on him here a little bit.
I immediately went to what kind of treachery did this guy do at college?
I knew what you meant, Slater.
Repetitive. There you go. Oh, does he overlap too much?
Redundant. Yeah, I knew what you meant.
Redundant. There you go. There's the word.
Is he treacherous? Is he treacherous? We don't know.
Yes, I think he duplicates Jordan Poole. Yes.
I envision Jordan Poole as point. Like, I think you got to put Jordan Poole the point guard, and I don't think Book Knight is point. So
I think Book Knight might want to control the ball a little. I don't know if you watch too many of these UConn.
No question. I think maybe, but that's what. So you have two guys.
I like him. Two guys who can score. I saw this dude down low on a baseline a lot, and he's like baseline one step, put it in. Like, you don't see too many guards who are operating from the low post. Like, you know, finding cracks, catching, going up strong. I think he can do it. I like his shot. I think he can play off the ball more. But I want to see Jordan Poole run point. Like, that's what I want
to
see. So
I just think it's never terrible to have an extra guy who can score. You think Milwaukee wouldn't love to have another guard who can score right now? Like, you just cut him. They're playing freaking Jeff Teague some minutes, and they shouldn't because they have nobody else after David, whatever his name is, Dante got hurt. It's not bad to have more offensive talent. And with a little size, and they both have size, and playmakers, and just stuff that the defense has to worry about. I don't think, again, I understand he's less of a value because he does a lot of the things, ideally, that Jordan Poole does. But I don't think it's not a huge thing. And one of them gets hot one game, the other one gets hot the next game. Maybe if they both get hot, the second unit just completely cooks the other team. I don't think it's an issue to have two guys who both can kind of get their own because the Warriors did not have enough. Michael Mulder was not that. You know, Damian Lee is not that. These guys, you know, Eric Paschal is not that. They did not have that last two seasons. If you have a little extra of it, not terrible.
I think I might be wrong about Gonzaga. Jeez, Sabonis, Kelly Olynyk is good. Brandon, I forgot about Brandon Clark. I like Brandon Clark.
Brandon Clark's real talent. Yeah.
They have so many guys. They produce so many guys that, and those things change. I remember Duke would just never produce guys that were up to the billing. But then
Ethan would know this too. Isn't Chet Holmgren the projected number one pick going to Gonzaga?
Yes, he is Gonzaga.
I think so.
Well, Gonzaga's number one, I think, next season. So they're going to keep funneling these guys through. Now, they're not like just that sort of.
I was burned by Adam Morrison and Austin Day and these guys who I thought were going to be great. So I'm still feeling like.
Austin
Day. I thought Austin Day was about to be the truth, man.
Dan Dickow.
I covered him.
Holmgren seems like he's on a different level. I mean, these guys, high school, it's so hard to project, but oh my God.
I don't know. He was getting cooked by that what's his name? Wembanyama or the French guy?
We should probably learn how to say his name because it sounds like he's best prospect in the world right now.
Nice. He was so nice. I'm all about that. You know, the Warriors need to go ahead and get Wembanyama.
I didn't try it. You need to not try it.
No, I just did it. Wembanyama. That's it. I just did it.
It's okay. Jeff Van Gundy still says Giannis, so it's okay.
The Warriors need to draft Kenny Lofton Jr. That's who they need to get. They need somebody who can get down low in a post.
Yeah, he can do that.
He can definitely do that. Hey, what's your rule? Whenever I see him, I think
A lot of potential. He's a young guy, so we won't say it, but something is potential in disguise.
Slater, right, did you give your picks, by the way? Who are you taking to seven? Who would you say?
Again, I've said this in other places. Every time I watch Mitchell, he just is doing things that other guys on the court aren't, and I just – maybe I'm thinking too much on with a brain about next season and the season after.
No, this is what we want. There's no stat. You're just giving a – it's just a take on the play. This is the vibe.
On another pod, I basically, JTA forced his way into the rotation last season because he just got on the court and he just did shit. And it was like, oh, you know, he's out there. He stripped somebody on the wing. He flew in for this rebound. He hit a three, even though the percentages say he shouldn't hit threes. He made the right backdoor cut. And it was like, well, you know, he kept not being in the rotation, but it was like every time Steve Kerr put him out there because he was forced to do it.
With TK hating the whole time, by the way.
TK saying he shouldn't be. No, but now it's to the point that, like, Steve Kerr, on the interview I said the other day, is like he basically has made himself into a perfect rotation player for them. Davion Mitchell is like the guard version of that, essentially, with, you know, some offensive upside that I think is being undervalued, and the speed package that he has, which I don't think people can grasp yet how actually fast and explosive he is.
The flop package he has.
Well, guess what? You know, there's some good players out there with the flop package. Kyle Lowry, Marcus Smart got a flop. Yeah, well, there you go.
I still just think that. I mean, I know what you. I know the prompt was like, if they can't find a trade, if Kuminga falls to seven, they should be able to trade down. Whether it's Sacramento, New Orleans, Charlotte, and you get Davion, yeah,
or get a player. If someone really loves Kuminga, you might be able to get a player with that.
That's what I'm saying. Like you should be able to, and then get down and take. That would be rather ideal if you could get a player, trade down, get Davion, and then still have 14. You at least got a nice little bounty to work with coming to offseason.
I think you can say, tell the Kings, hey, jump up two spots, get Kuminga. We'll take your first-round pick next season. With Kuminga, you're probably going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, you're straight, man. Come on, y'all good. You got Halliburton. You ready.
Yeah, like I'd probably be like that 25th pick.
That's and you know what? We'll put Pascal in the deal. You give us next year's number one. It'd be great. It'd be perfect. Everybody wonderful.
We'll protect it. I was
watching, by the way, just another slightly different topic. I'm watching TV. I was saying Keldon Johnson just steps into this lineup and cuts and deflects and gets buckets. And you know who I'm thinking of? I'm thinking that's Moses JTA. Moody. No, I'm Moses thinking that's JTA. Moody. Like just somebody who knows how to play basketball in the system. Like it's all it takes is length, you know, it's physical ability, but just like when to make the cut,
and
when to
stick
go.
The overshot.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, especially on that team. But like that's where the Warriors are looking for. You know, they thought they had that with Jacob Evans. I keep going back to that one, and they really didn't. But they're looking for specific talent that can help them, you know, lengthen out their rotation. And that's why I think they have some advantage, especially at 14. That's why I wouldn't trade 14 if I'm them. I think you have real value at 14. 7, you know, not so much value. You gotta make the right pick. But at 14, you have some interesting options. And I think it might be Davion Mitchell at 14. I think it might be Kispert at 14. I think it might be Duarte at 14. I think they might have a choice between two of those guys at 14. And that's a pretty good place to be.
No doubt. Do we want to get into the KD stuff?
Yeah, Ethan, Kevin Durant is name dropping you on Twitter. Do you have a response for him? He will probably
what,
be
what
listening.
Were your surge sales? How did your sales go up?
I didn't even check that. I assume something good happened as a result of more publicity. That's all I do. I got texted by you. I got texted by other friends that he was calling me out by name. And when that happens, all I do is just tweet out the link to the book because what more can you say? It gets so deep, internet. My understanding of what happened, for those who do not know, who are listening, who are not on Twitter and everywhere else. So correct me if this is wrong. Andy Liu was saying something. Warriors Twitter extraordinaire Andy Liu was saying something about how Warriors fans would treat Damian Lillard and how it wouldn't be like what happened with KD. And then KD was shooting back at Andy Liu. And then it turned into this back and forth with Warriors fans. He criticized me for getting into people's heads that he was jealous of Steph. And then he went on Spaces, which is like Clubhouse, but it's the Twitter version, and argued with Warriors fans for like half an hour. Is that pretty much what happened? Am I missing anything?
I didn't follow the whole thing, but yeah, I think that's
Was it arguing or they were just peppering them with questions?
It was a combination. I think it was a combination. Yeah,
that's the thing. I don't know.
And what I saw, I mean, he obviously didn't love the assumptions people make by reading your book, but the acknowledgement of a book that's written by Ethan Strauss and all correctly laid out is not terrible by Kevin Durant. And, you know, in this world where your book is a definitive milestone or, you know,
we're brainwashing. We're brainwashing the masses.
That is also true. And
like a Pied Piper.
You know, nobody's saying it's all wrong. It's all terrible. It's just saying it's just part of the record. And that's not a bad place to be. And, you know, Kevin's going to have complaints about a lot of different things. That's fine. He's a person who has feelings and reacts to the way people think and write and say. But maybe he's perpetuating it here a little bit, I would
perhaps.
Say. Yeah, maybe he's making more of his. We wouldn't be talking about this unless he was doing it. But that's his choice. His option. He can keep
He did this in the years after in Oklahoma City. He kept the storylines going, including, obviously, everyone remembers the burner account story. But, I mean, he did it too much, really. I mean, like, people would stop talking about Oklahoma City, and then he would do something that would you know, re-rage the debate for 2 days.
He framed it as jealous of Steph. From my memory, what he would complain about to me, to other media people, was more the sense that we were puffing up Steph at his expense. That was one of the things. But I mean, there's just this pattern to it where he was also frustrated with the amount of acclaim that LeBron was getting after the finals. And that was a big thing. And that's just not me saying it or my book saying it. It's also Steve Kerr in an interview saying it. It's Draymond Green on All the Smoke saying it. So that happened. And, you know, we remember he went hard at Kendrick Perkins when Kendrick Perkins said that Westbrook was Mr. Thunder and had a big blow up with him over that. Jay Williams said that he never wanted to be compared to Giannis, and he said that on TV, and then Durant said, that's a lie, I never said it. There was also the situation with being frustrated that Warriors fans loved Mo Spates so much. So this is kind of, at a certain point, I do think when you see certain aggregators seize on one of these, there isn't like a sense of the track record that, look, all these stories can't be wrong. It would be crazy if he was the only guy in the league who had a bunch of stories like this and they were just all mythical. So
First of all, he's right about Spates. First of all. Let's
point that out. The Warriors fans loves Spates.
And
so
Spates
much
isn't the only one whose love of mystifies me. But also, you know what? Like this is like what I think is the weird thing is everyone now wants to say, this is why he left the Warriors. This right here, this is specifically the reason why he left the Warriors. He left the Warriors because of the same reason he went to the Warriors. He's a wandering spirit. He is somebody who's searching for things, and he's a great player that will always have options.
I think he's the best player in the league.
I think he is, too.
I thought you were about to say GOAT. I was like, oh, here we go.
No.
Oh, yeah. That would be quite – that would be – God,
but
it'd be very interesting.
He is – like, when you have all these options, and he certainly has given himself all these options – and you aren't sure. Now, other people have a lot of options. Like, I think we can think of number 30 for the Warriors, and they don't approach it the same way, but that's a different personality. Kevin just is someone who is looking for things. He's searching for things. I think we all think he's really intelligent. He's really, you know, entertaining to talk to. I love talking. I talked to him more than any player, I think, on the Warriors for his years there. At the end, it wasn't very nice things that he had to say to me, but that's okay. But that's he's just a searching personality, and that's what led him away from Oklahoma to the Warriors and led him away from the Warriors to the Nets. And I just think all these things add up to that.
Even that's an interesting quality of his personality-wise, where he has said awful things to you. He has basically called me a liar in public and tried to destroy my credibility, and neither of us dislike him. And his teammates didn't dislike him either, even if he was putting them through all of this crazy drama. There is something interesting about that, how he's just got something to him where whatever's happening, you don't come away from it going, oh, this is a bad guy. Like, that's just not, that's legitimately.
Yeah, he is searching for things. You know, Myers loves him, still loves him. And I think Bob's pretty good. You know, Bob's he's a nicer guy than me and you, Ethan. So that's a whole other thing.
Probably true.
But he doesn't have wrong takes on people he knows, and he really, really still likes Durant. And that means something to me, and a lot of things mean something to me, you know. And so this is just part of a personality that is always looking for things and changes his mind sometimes. And because he has constant options, because he can always go somewhere else, because he will be rewarded no matter what he does because he's so fucking good, then that's going to happen. He's going to go through different things, and everything he says is going to be analyzed and scrutinized and diced up, and I think he kind of likes it.
I do want to say one thing about it, because someone might wonder, why even talk about this? What's the point? He doesn't want this conception of himself out there. He prefers this idea of, I just love to hoop. You know, I just love the game. This isn't even how I think. This isn't a part of things. Well, it's because one of the main things that obsesses people is greatness. How does it happen? You think of all the stories of Michael Jordan. How did he become Michael Jordan? It's something people want to know. They want to replicate some of it in their own life, or they just want an understanding of how it happens, of how a prodigy happens. And it seems like, and it's just one component, it's not the main reason, but that desire, that burning desire of his to be considered the best and be agreed upon as the best seems to be a component to his actually getting there. And that is one of the reasons.
Do you mean his relentless pursuit to be the greatest? Is that what you mean?
I do mean his relentless pursuit. Well, I would say to be considered the greatest, which is slightly different. But yes, his excellent plug. You're so good at that.
Well, the Warriors are on the search for their next Kevin Durant.
Boom!
9 days from now. Will it be Moses Moody?
Will it be Chris Duarte? The GOAT, Chris Duarte. Corey Gispert.
Jalen Johnson out of Duke.
It's like a Slater times Howard Cosell thing, and I kind of love it right there. I love
that. That was my rap voice. I was trying to... rapping.
You were trying to wrap it up. We have lives to lead, and we got
yes. So draft about 9 days away. I believe we will do one like 2 days out from the draft, which will it'll really feel like go time. And not only that, I think free agency is like 2 or 3 days after that. Summer league in early August, which Ethan set up as maybe the most influential summer league in Warriors
of all time,
ever.
So it should be fun.
That Rick Barry summer league was probably more important, but we'll have
Anthony. Let's face it, it's the Anthony Randolph summer league.
Anthony Randolph and Morrow, right? Anthony Morrow. Yeah. That was big. All right.
Well, we will talk to you next week. See ya.
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. I have a great night.